Welcome, Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show here at BBS Radio. Boy, do we have fun here. By the way, tomorrow night's show on Sunday night, it's the last of the seminar series. My birds will be on with me tonight, too, because the sun hasn't set yet. Get used to it, because in the summertime we have birds and Dr. Bell. But the final episode of the 18-hour tape series is being presented tomorrow night. That's a $300 value that you can listen on BBS Radio for free, and it covers all the propulsion systems and how the Pleiadians developed their hyperspace drives. And I even read a poem from one of my Pleiadian friends, James Anthony, that I had the honor of working with for 1 year physically side by side before he went back to the Pleiades. His name was Sir James Anthony, and he was knighted by the Queen of England, and he drove around in an NSA truck and always came down with NSA people. But he's gone back to the Pleiades. So that's a story tomorrow night. Tonight we have Randy Masters, and by the way, everybody, folks down there at 1340 Tan Talk Radio in Florida, my South Bay listeners, my Tampa Bay listeners, I'm glad and honored to have you on the show tonight listening to us. You're making this show really, to grow down in the Florida, Alabama direction. Tonight we have Randy Masters, who has developed this wonderful hydrogen frequency tuning fork. And he's developed some amazing wind chimes. We'll have all his products. We were trying to get him to come to the seminar, but he got a little bit tied up. But we're going to be selling his products on Pyridyne, because when you go into meditation with one of our systems, the wind chimes and these tuning forks will definitely tune you up before you go into like a holographic projector system. What I have found, and my girlfriend Mikkel has found, that when you use these things and you put them near the chakra points on your body, you get an incredible stimulation of energy. And if you have a nuclear receptor on, or the projector, just hold it right above that while you're wearing it, and it sends energy way into your chest. So anyway, I'd like to bring my guest on now. Randy, how are you doing, man?
Oh, it's been a wonderful day up here, just excellent and beautiful and sunny and good energy. It seems like the universe has progressed another notch. The amount of input and things coming in, I feel like I've been advanced several years here in the last month.
Yeah, where are you at, up in Nevada?
It's Santa Rosa tonight.
Santa Rosa? Oh, yeah, I went to junior college there. Santa Rosa Junior College. Took a course over there. I already had a degree, but I went back, took some more courses, because I liked it up there when I got out of the Air Force. I already had a master's degree, but I went and took anthropology courses, I love that place. I used to live on a street called Humboldt Street. Where in Santa Rosa are you, anyway?
Off of Sundown Trail, Mark West Springs Road.
That's out towards the ocean.
Northern part as you're heading toward
the new area.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, the new area. Right or left side of the main freeway going through there?
On the right.
Okay.
I'm out here amongst nature, and there's wildcats and bobcats and deer and all kinds of wild animals around, and it's a wonderful, wonderful, serene place.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun at the Sound Healing Center conference. That was good. Did you like that?
It surpassed my expectations, and I got to meet with a lot of people who I've talked to over the years but had never met in person, and I was amazed that so many of them showed up under the same roof at the same time.
Yeah, I think, including yourself, there was a lot of world-famous celebrities there, in our field, respective fields.
A good portion of the ones who have really been paving the way here were all there.
Yeah, they were all there. I mean, it wasn't just a sound healing conference. We had Dr. Flanagan flew in, who was my old buddy from way back, 25, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, we had pioneers, and Dr. Emoto jumped in from Japan. I mean, it's like who's who in the new age that really makes a difference. A lot of people out there that talk about it and do parroting and repeating of people, but these were all the pioneers,
The nice thing really is there. Is that they're in different categories that are complementary, even though it was a sound healing conference. There was a large dose of sacred geometry that I was also participating with, and with Dr. Moto and the water and the cymatics, all of these complementary areas converging together, which I believe we're all supposed to work our different piece together.
Yeah. It was really interesting. In my book back in 1979, Death of Ignorance, I had the the Earl of Oxley of England had blessed water and done radionic and photography, and actually photographed the change of the molecule of water. Then after the blessing, the change of the molecule of water to what it looked like, and it looked like the structure of titanium, and it's like a cross. And I started making products, you know, on titanium based on what he had seen. Dr. Emoto came along and started, you know, putting different emotions into water and then freezing it and taking pictures and taking it to another level. And I don't know how much he's done with sound, but I'm sure he's doing a lot. And it just went on from there. Randy, of course, is presenting all his hydrogen frequency stuff, which is amazing. And also those wind chimes and all the, well, you, what all did you have with there? You have more than you had. Tell us about what you've been making. I mean, your stuff's amazing. You know.
Well, by the way, yeah.
Thank you for presenting me with this. The way I would describe it is a tuning fork with adjustable modules on the end. And explain what you gave to me, and then tell us what you brought.
Well, in your book, Rays of Truth, you mentioned that 25,827.5 years, and a lot of people have been using the rounded off 25,920 year figure, but you know, we know from the contact with the Pleiadians and others that there is another exact value. And so I had always felt to make the one according to the Pleiadian measurements, because it's a lot more accurate rather than the things that have been sort of passed down and rounded off in history, because it makes a nice, wonderful whole number.
Hold on. I got new listeners. Listen, what Randy is describing is the number of pyramid inches around the base of the pyramid and the amount of years as we rotate around the central star called Alcyone in the Pleiades. And that's what he's describing now. And our energy shifts. So he's describing something that goes avant-garde, a tuning machine that goes avant-garde where we are at this point in the precession of the equinox of going around the Pleiades. So go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
So once you use that exact value, you get a note in the, let's say, in the F range,
the
you
F
could
sharp,
call
them,
or and actually F.
Okay.
And it's been very effective putting that tuning fork on and around the body, third eye, other areas like that, heart, and so on. And most of the work that Hans Cousteau had done, of course, when he calculated what they call the Platonic year, he used the value 25,920, was like an ideal year with 2,160 years in each one of the 12 zodiacal signs. But that's
right.
Like an ideal and not really what the universe is doing.
Exactly.
And that number shows up also in a lot of ways in the unified field and in different temples. But to have the exact value, I believe, opens a certain door, because it's the sound frequency of that rotation. And I believe that the doorway that opens is not the doorway that an average number that is unrealistic opens. And that one may not open a door today. So I felt like I learned that value from you. And of all the tuning forks I've ever made, that was symbolic of, you know, something that I got from you that I felt when it came full circle again, you know, it would put a smile on your bean.
Yeah, no, it did. And what's the exact, you know, offhand, what the exact cycle is? This in the 400 and something range, or what's the frequency of this?
Oh, it's 172 point something hertz in the octave.
I mean, you get it down. You go to decimal points beyond the last numerical whole value. I think that's amazing. You know, it's totally cool. And let me tell you something. In my X1 healing machine, I'm going to have to figure out a way to mechanically strike these things. I don't know if we could record them as beautifully as this, because I want to use this in my holographic stuff. I want to use.
I can also make them in tubes.
Harmonics. This all the way through from A B C D E and F. And you've got the bottom here. I want to do the higher frequencies exactly like you did this.
Well, I'm planning on contacting some of the special gong makers and having them make some of the gongs tuned to special frequencies. I've been making 1-inch, 2-inch, and different kinds of sound tools in addition to tuning forks. And, you know, I could make a tube that you could just hang down and you could just strike it with a mallet. So let me know, and I'll make one for you, and we'll see if that will make it convenient and easy to use.
But that would only... But the thing is, with the X1 healing machine, a person is sitting looking at a screen, it's putting out radiation and sound, and the sound is in a surround sound system. So I'd have to record it probably onto something. You know what I mean? We have to, you know, really record this puppy down to what it can do, you know?
Yeah.
And because it would be impractical to run around and have a bunch of people, you know, hit these things. We got to pre-record them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But I also need to do it if we do it on digital. I wish, you know, we were still doing analog, because to me, analog was where it was at. You know,
I totally agree. I resisted digital for years.
Yeah. I've got a TIAC, I forget the model, two-track recorder that I got from David Tickle. I spent $1,800. It's got all that stainless steel on the front of it. David Tickle produces Elton John, all these big stars, and had all the way back to the Beatles. And I got his old, he used to mix down to this TIAC thing that I've got down there in my studio. When you come down here, you'll see it. It's a two-track, but I mean, they mixed down from, in those days, a two-inch wide Sony. You probably know the Sony, you know, master decks. They mix it down through the boards, the analog boards, onto this two-track. I somehow or other, I want to mix it down to the two-track and then digitize it, you know, because there's something about...
That's what I've been doing on most of my recording projects, you know, doing analog, and then once it has to go into digital, at least sometime along the train of events, the full analog information has been logged. If you use digital recorders, you miss that.
Yeah, me? I miss a lot. I mean, you guys, you know, tell everybody where you used to play. You play the trumpet, right?
Trumpet, piano, and guitar, and different percussion instruments.
What were some of the bands you worked with?
I was the musical director for Hejoli Sounds from Ghana. They were the national band of Ghana. They used to be with Hugh Masekela, the Grazing in the Grass trumpet player from South Africa. And then I played a number of times with Tito Puente's orchestra and with his Latin Jazz All-Stars, a lot of times with Cal Jader. I was a musical director on a project with Charlie Bird, you know, before he passed away, and I wrote all the music and did all the arrangements, and we had a lot of those groups and were combining Latin American, African, Caribbean, Brazilian music. I worked with Batucaje in Brazil and represented Brazil in the third Caribbean Music Festival. So a lot of the Ashwin Batish from India, really rich musical experiences, any of which most people probably would have been happy to spend years on the road traveling. Yeah. I'm very fortunate to have had those kind of beautiful musical experiences that were with no compromise.
I brought that up because you've worked with probably some of the most avant-garde bands, you know, since the 40s. You know what I mean? You know,
yeah.
Since, you know, way back when Cal Jader was like coming through the 60s, I was a freak of his music, you know, at one time. And by the way, Cal Jader was a leader in jazz, and he was a totally an amazing guy. I mean, his stuff was so new age, and it was so far back then, you know.
There was a lot of heart and soul in all of those groups. That was one of the common denominators. It wasn't cerebral, although certainly a high level of cerebral content was in the music, but the heart level and the feel pervaded,
yeah.
And that's what I liked. The group from Africa, it really changed my whole view of music to play with musicians that put that kind of a smile on an audience by just where they were coming from. They were just so beautiful, and when they would sing and play. And so I would be playing trumpet, and then I'd set it down and go back to the keyboard and learned a lot of the African dance and many, many things that really changed my life.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got to get you down here. I know you haven't played in a while because you turned to scientist, and I guess you teach. Where do you teach school at now? Bob Hoover was telling me you were teaching school, you know, a couple days a week.
Well, I've been teaching for about 15 years at the Community School of Music and Arts in Mountain View, where I teach composition and piano. I have a number of virtuoso students who are out there. Yuma Sung, who's Chinese and Japanese, he's recording for CBS in Japan, and Taylor Eigsti, who's on several different labels, pianists and so that's been something where I, no matter where I go into the far out things, I have all this musical information that I don't want to put aside and not pass on. So one day a week I dedicate to passing on the musical information that I've gleaned over the years. And then of course it's also up at Globe Institute, and then I teach at different conferences and private workshops and that type of thing. I used to teach in the university, but it was time for me to leave the system, especially given this more far out regions that I've gone into. I needed to not fall underneath the auspices of a university, so I could completely go wherever the sound current took me.
But what universities were you teaching at anyway?
University of California, Santa Cruz for 10 years with the music department, and was also artist in residence.
That wasn't a bad campus, though, was it?
Oh, it was a blast. It could not have been better anywhere in the world, probably, to be in a university than the early days of UC Santa Cruz. It was an amazing experiment in consciousness and teaching. And then I went to San Jose State after that and taught, which was certainly a more conservative environment. But at UC Santa Cruz, that's where Bob Hoover and I were both teaching there. And there were Gordon Mumma, who's in electronic music. You may have heard of him. And we had film. And so I was working in film and music both there. I had a great time. And then I would bring these groups that I played with, a lot of them, through the campus and put on concerts. And it was so creative. It was like the best of the 60s, but advanced a little bit more responsible in the 60s.
Yeah. Well, that was amazing, you know. I mean, I bet your concerts were packed when you brought those guys on.
They loved it. That sound, and I was always writing things and innovating. I was a specialist in odd time signatures other than 4/4, so I play whole concerts without playing even one piece in 4/4 time, like mambos and 7/4 and sambas and 3 and 5, and that was a specialty. Don Ellis did that on the trumpet with his big band, and of course Dave Brubeck did, but I found a way to make odd time signatures soulful rather than mechanical, and people could dance.
You know, when I started playing clarinet in the sixth grade, I played in orchestras. I played in marching bands and orchestras up for a few years. And I learned really fast on that stupid thing. But I learned to read the music, and I learned to just totally discipline. Finally, I didn't play it for 20 years. Then I started playing it again. I started reading music on it again, learned my, you know, F, A, C, E, and all the scales. And I started doing it all again. And you know what? I threw all the music out, and I said, you know what? This is how it goes. And so then I started just playing it by feel. You know what I mean? It took about 20 years to get out of it. I mean, we get so disciplined in music, and I, you know, I have three daughters, and I want them all to play music. One of them is a great guitar player and singer, and she blew two record deals because she had a drug and substance abuse problem. I think she's outgrowing it, if not anything else. The other two are not musically inclined. I can't get them to play piano or anything, but I think that my feeling in our society, rather than going down and getting the Effexor or some kind of a drug, you know, because you're a little depressed, if you have the ability to play some kind of a musical instrument, regardless of what it is, just for a few minutes every day, that's the best tranquilizer is on the planet. What do you think?
I think so. There's a lot of things that bring coherence into a person's field playing music, especially with some degree of acoustics, if possible. I'm not saying that not electric guitar wouldn't count, but still playing like through analog.
I heard that thing. Now, tell everybody what that is real quick, because everybody on my network knows what a sitar is, and it came from the Pleiades. Tell them about that.
The Byzantar?
Yeah, the Santar.
No, the Byzantar, what it is Mark Deutsch took an acoustic bass, and he created a, you know, five-string version of the bass, and then he put these large, tunable, sympathetic strings on it. Every one of them is tunable, so you can tune the whole bass into a particular harmonic area. Then he plays harmonics all over the bass with both the bow and pizzicato with his fingers and plucking it. And the amount of overtones is the most I've heard from anything just about except the gong. The sandawa, an instrument from India, also has a huge overtone bass, but not as powerful as this Byzantar.
Yeah. This sounded like a sitar, though. I mean, you know, like,
yeah, like
a
bass sitar or something.
The lower raga sounds, not the higher leads. You know, whang, you know what I mean? That lower sound that they do. I was playing around with listening to, you know, because your wife gave me or your girlfriend or somebody gave me the
girlfriend.
The music that she had recorded, that was female thing. Remember that? What's the name of that female song that she did? The female album.
The one to the Mary Magdalene or the one to Isis and Osiris or?
I don't know. It's the third one down, and it has that instrument on there.
Yeah, there's several pieces that we did, and all that Byzantar is recorded live, because Mark actually plays both sitar and bass and has studied Indian music, so it was natural for him to combine the two because he had real, true experience on those instruments.
Randy, while we got right here, tell people how that your girlfriend gave me a copy. Thank you, tell her, of that. But the other people need to hear this music that we're talking about right now. You have it on a CD. Could you just tell them what album to get and how to get it real quick? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, we're going to put it on her website. They can look up Music for Joy and Healing on her website, and she'll sell it through that.
Okay.
And if they can't find it any, The phone number to call is 707-526-9852.
Repeat it one more time.
Once again, that 707-526-9852.
Yeah, Randy, this is not a commercial show, but I know the people get excited about the guests I have on here, and you know you're special, and so I want you're gonna if you don't mind, we're gonna have you on the show a lot.
Well, I'd love it.
Yeah, because Bob Hoover and I and you are going to be working on some projects. By the way, that concert, remember I played that 15 minutes I did of a concert up there that night? Did you hear what I was playing?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did.
Okay, did you like that NUS-type girl that came up and sang with me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think when you combine the synthesizer with those patches with acoustic voice, some other dimension happens.
I haven't played a concert in 91 is the last year I played one. It's been a while, but I felt comfortable. But we're going to do an album down here, and I'm going to produce it. And at some point in the fall, so think you can get your karma caught up, so you can come down here and spend a few weeks and work.
Oh, absolutely! I love to work with improvising musicians who can also be in touch with a higher spiritual directive in their music.
Exactly.
Create that way.
Yeah, when I used to tour with the Moody Blues, that was such disciplined, beautiful music. But I said I could never do this because it's repetitive. And then, of course, when the Grateful Dead came out and they do those improvs in between their standard songs, I said, this is what works for me. And I have always done that when I go out and do concerts. Now, I think we can get you out and do a concert again?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
I've
good.
Been an improvising musician.
What musical instrument are you going to play?
Well, there's a number of them I play. It's just fitting the practicing into my schedule is the challenge. Because all
I know
once
about it. I had to fit into my schedule. I started practicing 2 months before I was up there, about four nights a week. You know, for an hour, that's all I can handle of myself. and to do what I did for 12 or 15 minutes, it's a lot of work. People don't realize when you go out and you play a 90-minute show, you rehearse for 6 months. If you want it to come off, and then you can still improvise, you know what I mean? But there's a certain, I feel, and it works for me, maybe I'm wrong, but I think you almost have to rehearse for 6 months before you take it on the road so you can make it consistent with something. You know, is that about your...
I studied improvisation since, I was always fooling around. Even when I played in a symphony orchestra, I could hardly leave the notes alone.
I just said, look,
this is not for me because I want to improve on things. And, I mean, without any disrespect to the great composers, a lot of the trumpet writing wasn't all that interesting in certain ways. I could think of lots of things that I'd want to do. And so I've always been that way, whether it was jazz or pop or blues or all the different styles, to invent spontaneously. And then when I studied all the world music styles and the different scales and the moods that those scales create, it's unlimited amount of things that can be done, and it doesn't have to sound like jazz. Sometimes when I've done it, nobody knew that I was improvising. They thought it was a written piece. It doesn't have to, depending on where you're coming from and what aspects of music you have dominion over when you're playing.
Yeah. One of the things that I did back when I was working with Leo Fender, he was one of my clients when I owned an electronics company. I used to calibrate all his spectrum analyzers, his voltmeters, and everything that he used to produce the old Fender series of amplifiers. And my God, I used to know every amplifier, and he gave me all those Wildwood guitars. But he had a lot of test equipment, so I used to take care of it. This was way back in the 60s.
I had a lot of that Fender. I still have lucid musical dreams where I'm playing guitar, and I even know the notes I'm playing. I haven't played, so much in concert since about somewhere in the 70s on the guitar, but the dreams I have, I'm playing exactly like I play. I find that very fascinating because I'm not practicing it, and I haven't since the late 70s, and yet it feels like there's a reality where I'm still continuing on as a guitarist, and every once in a while it drops into this one. I don't know where that's leading.
No, I'll tell you, I think, how much music in the last 12 months, how many times have you sat down and actually practiced or played music, just out of curiosity? I mean, just picked up any instrument. I don't care if it's a piccolo or a flute or just some, banging on a gong. How many times in the last year, because I know you've been career-oriented and working on this other stuff, how many times have you actually played music in your house?
Well, it's actually at a minimum when I, either have a dinner party or people come over, I'm doing a workshop and the piano's there, I'll play pieces, and And
okay,
then,
now the question is, you'll do that. How many times have you done that in the last year?
I don't know. It seems like...
Yes, 100 times, 365 times, how many?
Oh, you know, maybe less than 100 times.
Okay.
Not every day, maybe every so many days.
Okay, I got it. So you're playing 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah.
50 weeks in a year. You have to play at least.
But it's not like I'm just sitting at home writing and playing. When the occasion calls for it, I just go. It's like the red light comes on, you're recording, I sit down, I just play. And the rest of the time, these research projects are so fascinating, they've like swept me way out on these waves.
I know.
That.
Well, that's what I'm leading up to. And I'm going right back to where you were in the conversation about this new methodology of playing again, spontaneous playing. What I have learned, this is just me, okay? And I'm a little bit older than you, and I've been playing about 50 years now, but actually more than that. God, I'm 63, so...
I'm 57, so it's not too bad.
I started playing in the sixth grade. In the last couple years, in the last year, I've played at least 150 times, you know, or maybe more, but I pick up a flute. It took me I bought a flute 3 years ago, and I'm just now playing it where I can play along with music. It took forever to get a sound out of it. Then I played my clarinets and the other stuff. But the point is, I have learned by just letting it all go, I can walk up to a song I've never heard before and just pick it up in about 12 or 15 bars and play it on a flute, which I've never played before, by just surrendering to the whole thing. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely.
Before I had the peer pressure, you know, first chair, first row clarinet, fourth row last, and I'd vacillate because I'd freak out, you know, during trials, you know, how we did in high school.
Oh, well, I remember that. That was the worst part of music.
Yeah, and then when I got in bands and played in different bands, no, it wasn't too many, most of them I organized, then I was a play to, you know, I was always with musicians that had more talent than I am. Certainly, I'm a scientist just fooling around. These guys outweigh me, and some of them are world-famous celebrities like George Winston, all the people I played with. So now I'm freaking out that I'm going to screw it up because I'm not in their caliber. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I surrounded myself when I grew up.
Here? It's like, huh?
And then I surrounded myself with heavy talents as I grew up as a child, and those stronger musicians held the field for me to develop in.
Yeah, see, that's great. I wish I'd have had that, you know.
Well, it was amazing. I was always the youngest.
Yeah, I still am. I may be older in years, but in experience, I'm really young. You know, I really am. But it's not, you know, like playing up there with all those famous people three or 4 weeks ago at the festival. I was up there playing with some major players. That keyboard player behind me was like one hell of a world-famous keyboard player. He's played on everything, you know. But I was using my new attitude. I don't give a damn. You know what I mean? I'm doing what I feel I'm doing, and if you like my feeling, you'll listen to me, and it seemed to work.
When you think of the experiences you've had, you know, if those aspects of that knowledge and wisdom that are in your energy field can come through when you play an instrument, that's a tremendous sharing that technique doesn't do. It has to do with where you're coming from and the way you play and the kind of energy field that gets created when you interact with the people and the instruments in the field.
Yeah, and I remember my friend Willie Nelson told me, because he went through a lot of changes in life, and Willie told me, he said, whenever I start playing in a concert or, you know, whatever you call what he does, he says, I always pick one person in the audience and I look right in their eye and I stay in their eyes as much as possible through the whole concert, just one person. And he says, that gives me the gauge of how I'm doing.
Oh, fantastic.
Is that cool?
That's very cool.
He does country, but I mean, he's a really cool guy.
Well, he's got a great soul, and you feel that in the sound and tone quality that he's singing is very, very interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm looking to do now is actually bring these interesting scales that people are not used to hearing in tuning systems into the concert.
About that. I think it's fabulous.
Well, you know, most of the instruments, I mean, when we retune the synthesizers of the keyboards to certain tunings, of course, a lot of the times other instruments can accommodate. For guitar, we have to use some different fretboards. I have a friend that makes fretboards for guitars where the frets are in a different place so that you can play in certain different scales. Acoustic bass is not a problem. Any of the other classical stringed instruments is not a problem, nor the brass or woodwinds. But the fretted or what they call the fixed pitch instruments, that's when we run into certain challenges. So if I wanted to have a vibraphone player, I'd have to have a set of keys made in the tuning system that I wanted to work in. Right. And these tuning systems allow you to play intervals that have different emotions in them, like in, certainly in the Indian music system with 22 notes to the octave, there's very specific ratios they play in the ragas in order to achieve the certain emotional states that when they adjust to equal tempered, most of that is lost, except for good tone quality and technique and the rhythmic patterns and the general melody. The specifics of those intervals are lost. So what I've been dedicated to in the last about 15 years is doing both ancient and some new kinds of tuning systems that people haven't heard. And I believe we're going to break into some different territory that when the pitches of equal temperament are insisted upon, you know, it locks you into like a straitjacket, and I'm wanting to break out of that. The thing is I'm having to train the musicians because some of the best that I know are not adept in these tuning systems. I mean, string players learn Pythagorean pitch and just tuning, so if you hear a string quartet play, they know how to play in non-equal tempered tuning. Brass players, it's all based on the overtone series, so they know in general what that is, and of course, all the woodwinds have that ability. But to bring into pop music and to bring rock, pop, blues, jazz into the field, we're having to deal with tunable synthesizers and also guitars that have some removable fretboards so that we can get some different scales. And I believe then we'll start playing pitches so that every single pitch the musicians play can have a significant meaning rather than only a representational meaning. Like it does with equal temperament. In other words, in equal temperament, the notes are not found in nature most of the time. And
well,
with these other scales,
the Pleiadian language spread all our sounds of nature.
I'd love to hear some of the Pleiadian music and just get an idea of what are they working with, and in their journeys through the universe, what have they found that really works? And if they would share some of that with us, maybe we could bring out on Earth certain Pleiadian sounds.
Well, I tell you, you know about the F-curve's flute, right?
Yes.
You read about that in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me explain it to the audience real quick. I'll just take a second. An S-curve flute is when, first of all, you have to know how to do a traspasso. You look at the opposite sex, same sex, in the left eye. You look left eye to left eye. You stand about 3 feet apart, do a couple of breathing exercises, relax. Just look in that left eye and just gaze off into infinity, and that's called a traspasso. So that what you're really doing is you're going through what's called transfiguration of the soul, and the soul, you'll start to hallucinate. It's not really hallucinating, but you start switching frequencies and going etheric, and you'll see in the other person, usually you'll see your face on that person's face, whether it be male or female, and she or he will see your face on that, you know, their face on yours, and that's the releasing process. It's an old Tibetan custom that goes back, you know, 26, 28,000 years. So now what you do is you take a flute, and I've just learned how to play it. I'm learning how to play a flute. When I'm 90, I'll be learning how to play a flute. But you blow into a flute, and it, just to get the sound out of it is the sonic breath across the top of the mouthpiece. Once you learn how to do that, then you got the notes. Well, they have an S-curve, so the two people are blowing simultaneously, doing a traspasso and playing these notes. The sound it produces a resonance that's so rich in timbre that it liquefies light, and I've seen it. It just snakes around. Snakes around you, you know, like for 30, 40 feet out there, it's blue, depending on the note. It's just this weird thing. It's like lasers that are plastic. I mean, like somebody took a piece of optical tubing and just moved it around and shot coherent light through it. So that's what the S-curve flute's all about.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've seen it. And it's, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, you don't even want to know. The engines on those ships, like I was saying at my seminar up north, you know, sound, power, light separated. Remember, were you there when I was talking about how they grow the hull variation three ships? They're like they take a room and they have these special seeds and they have this ultrasound and this beautiful sound and these big giant mushroom like things grow up 21 feet across, like a big giant mushroom. And they have the caudal chambers, you know, similar to like a psilocybin mushroom. And a psilocybin mushroom, if you take this and ingest it, what happens is it resonates the MOA, the monoamines and the serotonin in the brain to such a point where it creates neuron spacing in the brain, which allows, like when you hold a snail shell up, the energy to come in and you hear that roar in the snail shell. It's Fibonacci series in the air passage. Same thing happens in your brain, but now it's a consciousness passage and you go up on the journey that the mushroom is, you know, is giving you. by that resonance through modulation of the brain synapses. So what happens is in a Pleiadian ship, they remember like Leo Fender used to harden, he'd grow a tree, and then he'd put a dye in it, and then he'd harvest the tree, and all the stain would be in the wood and the guitar from this purple dye or orange dye, and they call it the Wildwood series. They're classic collectibles. That's how these ships are. And then they would shoot a resin into this growing thing, and it would become harder than titanium and lighter than, you know, aluminum. And that's the resonant chamber where they do the sound, power, light separation at.
Okay. And they wouldn't have problems with meteors or anything when they're traveling in it?
No. Because this system is not the hyperdrive. This system is what gets it off the ground. And then the system that we've been talking about with the D-50s is the sound that goes inside of it that then raises it off the ground. And that's why I want to get Bob's speakers down here because, to the levitation. In my book, so those of you out listening, I was able to successfully levitate in my studio using these sounds that are created from the Pleiadian spaceships, you know, into my D-50s. And now we're getting ready to do that again, to actually duplicate it. So that's what I'm talking about here. This is for the audience out there. Mm. So anyhow, yeah, it'll be exciting because I'm back into it, you know. This time, you know, it's like I let it sit on, that project sit on the shelf since about 96 or 95 when I actually did it. It's been 12 years. Something motivated me to get it out. And I guess maybe it was this conference, you know. I didn't even think about levitation when I was playing the concert up there, but now I am. You know, I just bought some more rack mount D-50s so that we can really set this thing up and really do it, you know.
There must be something in the world psyche now that's calling for some of these things to come back out and be integrated.
I'm not the originator of the idea at all, you know. I totally agree with him, you know.
One of the things I've been working with is tuning to geometric shapes and then taking the same ratios that are found in the geometric shapes and making different kinds of wind chimes out of them. And I'm looking to do concerts where we could actually play these shapes. And I'm very interested in what could happen in a concert situation.
You know what was really funny? Before you started off spontaneously on that, I was going to say, Randy, talk about your wind chimes. And there you go on them. Talk about them a lot because those things. You mean just down here, we're by the ocean, and the wind comes up, you know, at night and blows back in the daytime because of the inland. Those wind chimes, I can't wait to get some of those down here. I heard them.
Well, I've never known anyone who took this view. Most of the wind chimes that are made to just a few famous scales in the world, and they either do the actual ratios or they'll do an equal tempered version of those scales, and they're pretty generic Asian pentatonic scales, a few things like that. But what I'm doing is if I'm doing an ancient world tuning system, I'm actually using fundamental frequencies and specific ratios that are exactly used in those ancient tuning systems, and then I'm also deriving out of the study in science musical ratios. Like, for instance, the Hydrogen Project, I noticed that 100% of the hydrogen lines, it's a musical harmonic series of a particular type. And so by making tubes and wind chimes and other types of chimes and tuning forks to that, we're able to take something in science that's musical, but maybe it has ratios in it that people are not used to, and some of them have ratios that the ancient music systems had in them as well. So that relationship between what's found in the phenomenal world in science and music start coming together. And then I started analyzing a lot of the well-known geometric shapes, like the platonic forms and such. So I can take a dodecahedron, for instance, or a tetrahedron, and for every ratio that's in it, I can convert that ratio into music and play it as a chord or play the notes one at a time. So I think when that's combined with lasers and the lasers somehow can be tuned in a certain way according to some of these ratios, there's going to be something very, very different happening in the world between color and sound and sacred ratios for people to hear and see things. Because I feel that's getting back into the nature of how the reality was created to begin with. That's my view of it.
Well, you know,
anyway.
Here's the deal. Everybody's used to beep, 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 horns, you know, crowd noise, going to a restaurant noise, go home, watch their TV, turn their TV off and go to bed. There's no cleansing time. And then all through the night, weird sounds. You know, what I've been doing for years, I always pick some beautiful music. Like I use Theda Miller's, one of her song called Suspended, the girl was singing with me. Or I'll use some thunder and lightning and rain, background music every single night, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I want to do, okay, and this is what, if you don't do this, I feel that you're not going to get clear. I mean, I sleep really good, and I wake up and charge. So what I'm thinking here is those wind chimes with my little bit of background music, you know, the little thunder and lightning or whatever is wind.
Yeah.
And real wind, and those wind chimes outside my door, because I'm up, you know, three stories in this house that I live in Laguna. It's a real tall house. I'll have those puppies blowing out there in the wind, and I'll bet you the dream state, you know, and then people that want to have nightmares and stuff, you can have those, but this is the way, this is what I would call, anyway, the nightmare cure, because you're getting resonant frequencies. Remember, we all talk, on my show, Randy, we always talk about the hydrogen atom, you know, the body's oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. The hydrogen atom is consciousness. And you're playing around with consciousness. That's why I just love what you're doing. That's why we're talking. That's why we're friends. We're friends because we probably did this in Atlantis or something.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
I played with a lot of tuning forks, and I have a lot of toys around here that I buy and play around. And this tuning fork that you gave me at that conference is—I play with it. You know, if you call this playing an instrument, I play 365 now a year.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, that's how it's gotten for me. I've been actually, now that you mention it, playing with all my tuning forks and bells. Those are the instruments I've been playing with because I'm discovering some things that are different than what I discovered on all of the Western instruments. So I play tuning forks almost every day, or wind chimes. I have wind chimes tuned to the water molecule that hang outside my house, and that's also my prayer back to water and saying thank you for the gift of life. And if I heard you correctly, water, what do you think about me playing these notes back to you? Am I on track? You know, and so that's, I have a rapport with nature through sound. And
yeah, what we need to do is get you into a holographic projector, and right in front of that holographic projector, produce your water sounds, and you will hologram, you will get all this percolate from rocket fuel out of our water. You'll cure it of radiation. You know, Dr. Emoto can photograph it once we set this experiment up, and I'll show you. I think I have an idea where you can use your sound in this projection system, because these projectors, you've never seen them yet because you haven't been down here. I didn't have them at the show. These are about 8 inches tall.
No, I have not seen them.
You have seen them?
I have not seen
anyway,
them.
Anyway, when you put your sounds in the presence of one of those puppies, and I guess Steve Barish can modulate this, the guy on the East Coast, he's one of my scientists. That I got some doctors, medical doctors, monitoring the progress of this with patients and psyches and changes. You have no idea of the monitoring system I have. It's worldwide. I think we put your sound in, I think we can fix all the water molecules on this planet simultaneously. How would you like to do something like that?
Absolutely. I have a very big commitment to water, and I'm looking at all the scientific data on water that I can, and I've converted lots of the infrared spectrum into sound, where I'll get it in one format, let's say in light or infrared wavelengths, and then I'll convert that into sound. And when I did the rainbow, as it comes through the quartz prism, I get all but one note from a major scale. When I play that for people, they can hear a very coherent major scale come out of it, and I didn't change the ratios to make that happen. This is exactly what the rainbow going through the quartz prism actually creates. It creates like an A-flat major scale starting on G for red, and I get all but one note that's very coherent. And that's telling me something. And if you play concerts and actually use the notes of the rainbow in the concert, something must happen when nature hears us playing back to nature something that they've given us. There has to be a rapport with the divas and the other subtle realms of nature when one does that, because it's not like the left brain trying to conquer nature. It's a heart-centered place where science and the heart and the intellect and spirituality all converge. And my feeling is that when we play like that, nature's saying, okay, they're beginning to listen to us.
Yeah,
that's my thought about it.
Yeah, no, that's a hell of an explanation. I like that. No, but that's exactly the way it is. You know, with the Pleiadians, you and I have never chatted. It's kind of like we get to chat, you know, because you're so busy, I'm so busy, so we chat on the radio. You know, millions of people listen to us. But the bottom line is, when Sannyasi told me years ago, back in the 70s, and now I realize in the 70s I was not a nature freak like I am now, because the environment wasn't so screwed up. I was aware of it because I lived on a farm for a year, and that helped. But she told me, you know, to get next to God is to get next to nature. And she says, man can't even create a blade of grass and probably won't for another couple centuries. But we really believe in nature. And then when I got with the Andromedans and they taught me about the hologram, and there was a big message there, because I spent 21 years with this extraterrestrial. She was 5'2". She weighed 104 pounds. She had green eyes, greener than mine. And I spent time. We got paintings hanging on the wall here that we painted together. The camera goes on at night, and they change like the Dorian Gray phenomenon. There's so much stuff that she and I developed together. And I also worked with another guy named Anthony James, who was knighted by Queen Elizabeth, Sir Anthony James. And he went on a ship back to the Pleiades. He worked for NSA, drove an NSA van when he left.
Was he born here and then they took him to the Pleiades, or was he born there?
No. He was from there. He worked for NSA and then went back. Basically, in a real quick nutshell, his partner was married to Margaret Habsburg. She owns 60% of Europe. She lives in Palm Springs. She brings $1 billion a year, and that's all she can bring in this country. They were partners, James and her. James invented the infrared gun sight, the laser sight was used in the Rambo movie. They were living at Los Alamos. He worked out there with four grays from Theta Reticuli 3. Then when the old Habsburg guy died, Margaret freaked out. He came over here. She put him up in a 25,000-square-foot house over by in El Segundo. All James never ate because he was Pleiadian. He was dropped off and he was picked up. He never ate. We go to lunch or dinner. He didn't drink. He didn't eat anything ever. And he had one of my Portamed, 25,000-square-foot mansion in the courtyard, which is in the middle of the house. He had one of my Portameds and one of my receptors on, and that's how he lived, and drank a little bit of water until he left. And there's a whole other story. It's in my, if you listen to my Sunday night show, it's all explained tomorrow night, believe it or not. But
breathe prana directly, and that's how he thrived?
What?
Derive life force right out of the prana to keep him going the way he breathed?
Yes. That's how they do it. When I was back working at UCLA with in my early days at Paradigm, we worked at a lot of universities. We used to put these Tibetan meditating guys in a coffin and throw them in the bottom of a swimming pool for 15 hours, and all they had was their breath, and they come up and they're fine. I've been through that, and I've seen all that, and I've done all that, and learned to do a little of it myself, but not much. But anyway, bottom line is, I know what I'm talking, I've seen from experience how this stuff works. And when we holograph water, right back to the core of this, when we holograph water, the water will respond. That will change H2O. That changes everything on this planet instantaneously. And this is called divine intervention. And it's this kind of work that supersedes the pragmatic petroleum fuel, fossil fuel, greedy pharma companies. We just step right out of the water and they don't know what hit them. That's what's going to happen.
I had an article written about me in a newspaper. It was called Restoring the Goddess Through Water. And my main statement was, if you want to restore the feminine aspect in this world, restore water. And when you've achieved that, all the things that have polluted the water that get corrected will help restore the feminine on this planet and get things back in balance.
Yeah.
So I've really focused on water to say, what can we do with sound and water? What can we do with images in water? And that's what spurred me on to looking into the infrared spectrum and the geometry of water and to make wind chimes tuned to water just to see what would happen if we make those sounds. How does water behave? And how do people behave listening to sounds that come off of water in that way? Differently, let's say, than listening to a waterfall, but listening to the isolated frequencies frequency combinations that come out of the internal world of hydrogen, water, oxygen, and all of that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I just want to interrupt you for one second. We have on our website, we have what's called BBS Fast Chat, and that's why I'm standing here. I'm actually sitting here in my studio talking to you. People are, emailing me, and one of them said, any sacred sound examples available for radio, wind chimes, et cetera. So I think what we need to do when people are saying things like that, and I apologize because I can't get to everybody, when people are doing that, I think we should do that right here at BBS Radio. We could probably start introducing some of those sounds. What do you think?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think that's what the gifts are. They haven't been given to me to keep in my head, I think there is a reason why any discoveries I've made have been made is to be a gift back to creation, to forward creation.
Yeah.
That's my philosophy of life, in a way.
Yeah. We need to get you a show over here pretty soon. You know that? You probably could do with all your friends. We got Gibbons doing a show over here now, and his show's taking off. What do we have to do to talk you into doing a regular radio show here one of these days?
Well, I'm available.
Think about that, teaching to a lot bigger audience than you have been.
I'm available to do that. And I want to do things with you so that our synergy together, we create the kind of things we were born to create.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't, you know, I think that's great. You know, I look forward to having you down here. I wish you could come down this seminar thing. You could come down on Friday if you wanted for a day.
Well, I'll get my components down there soon as I can.
Oh, you will. It's fun when we have the seminar. It's up on June 8th and 9th or whatever. It's fun in these seminars because we get people from all over the place. And they're not, you know, they're all different kind of people, but we get some pretty smart ones in there that got some pretty cool ideas, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. Well, you do a lot of seminars, right?
Yeah, and it's usually like some type of a soul gathering where the people are directed to come there, and they have interconnections that sometimes they haven't met in this lifetime. When they do, many things start happening.
On that note, what I feel, this is my feeling, is like if Mariah Carey or just any singer, the way they sing and the message of emotionally through the heart that they put out there, it resonates with who likes their music. Some people like it and some don't.
Yeah.
So I feel that's kind of how the music world works. I feel that, you know, Elvis, of course, had sex appeal, and that wasn't his voice, it was his looks, so it was a little bit broader audience. But overall, when you average all the great musicians out at the time, they all have a following, you know, and a lot of the followings were, you know, only to their group.
What we're finding in the voice bio and doing voice bio with people, there's notes that they're missing, and some of the singers they listen to in their voice have a voice profile that has missing notes that they need, like a nutrition.
Right. No. Explain that a little bit more. I totally agree. Explain. Yeah.
Well, you know, Sherry Edwards developed a lot of work clairvoyantly, and many others have taken off on that basic concept. And when you do analysis of the voice and see that, like somebody who's been playing a C crystal bowl, for instance, the note C might be too much in their field and it's throwing out other systems in their body because they've overdone it with one note. And so you have to balance that out with a certain way of complementing that note. If it's too high or it's too low, and that's usually done in a tritone relationship, like if you want to balance C, then the note that balances that is an F sharp, which is the geometric mean, basically, between a low C and then the octave higher. The square root of 2 is the geometric mean, so that produces an F sharp, would be the square root of 2 times C. If your D note was, let's say, high and you wanted to bring it down, you would use a G sharp or an A flat note to balance that. And then as people tone those notes and sing them, all of a sudden, their voice profile is different, and many types of symptoms in their body and situations begin to clear up because they've harmonically gotten themselves back in tune from a situation where something was dominating that was throwing them out of whack in some way.
Yeah, well, see, that's the nuclear receptor that Semyasi gave me, that Paradigm cells now, that you know what they are.
Yeah.
We muscle test the person for their hydrogen atom weakness. So if it's green, it's thyroid. If it's red, it's something in the pituitary. You know, if it's a relationship thing or base of the spine, sexual, whatever, a catch-all is usually amethyst, but it gets a lot of it. So if we go to the frequencies of music and start putting out, I like to put out some sounds to mark it with the receptors, so when people get a certain stone. And then what we find is once you overcome that weakness, let's say you have a weak thyroid and you wear a receptor for, say, 6 or 8 months, thyroids now reproduce itself in a higher octave or vibrations, how I explain it. So the thyroid's functioning now. It's one of the stronger organs of the body. Maybe we need to go down to the adrenals and work there. You follow me?
Yeah. I've been working through scientific sounds associated with organs and also with different hormones that are out of balance. And, you know, I've discovered some things, you know, that help balance menopause, for instance, with particular hormones. And they have a really interesting relationship between those two hormones that relate to hydrogen. It was a discovery. I haven't written this up yet. And I've also used
that. And go ahead.
I've also been looking into the Larmor frequencies that resonate in like little radio signals that come out of the atomic nucleus. And I have the whole periodic table done in Larmor frequencies that have been studied in science. And I find that that is an area that might be worth following up in terms
that's
of...
That's an excellent area. We need to do a book together at some point.
I would love that. I think that'd be a very good project. Count
no,
me in.
We'd be punching each other's lights out all day long. It would be fun.
I know, that's right.
a lot of people that I've treated patients in that, because I'm a naturopath for 20 years, menstrual cramps, seeing as you're working in the change of life, what do you think we could do for women that have menstrual cramps? I think that all of them have a form of hypertension that causes it in the first place. But beyond that, what do you think that could we create something that's a big problem with women on this planet?
Well, I look at hormones. I look at problems like lack of magnesium, for instance, especially during that time in women, a great loss in magnesium. Hence, one of the reasons for craving chocolate is to get the magnesium out of it, from what I've been told.
Okay.
I think looking at what's happening on a mineral level and what's happening on a hormone level. And some other things that are happening in terms of psychologically, too, in terms of why someone would resist, in a sense, and I don't mean this in a critical way at all. I mean this, in a loving way.
That's a better word.
Might be resisting the flow. And, and all the comments that people have made about blood, I mean, that we could write a whole book on just the conversations of blood and how that's affected people. Sometimes you can't even talk about it without people having reactions.
Oh, I know. And then sometimes people see it on the street or something and they freak out even more.
They don't understand what that flow is about and what the opportunity is. And there's a lot of belief systems and things that I think also need to be addressed so that people don't have a fear of natural processes or a misunderstanding of it where they've been criticized or things that happened when they grew up. Now, all of a sudden, I think the psychological component of menstrual cramps is also a big factor.
Yeah, no, I totally 100% go with you on all those levels, but I think okay.
Well, we can do that another time, that's for sure.
Yeah, we got another one. But I want you to, in closing the show, I want to thank you for coming on. Let's work on this cramping. Let's get a tuning fork they can listen to. Because I've been playing around with some women with this one you gave me that have this problem, and it seems to help them. All right.
Well, I'll get some made and get some down to you to play with and check it out, because I've already working in the hormonal area with that.
Okay. All right, we got to close the show down. Thank you. We had Randy.
Thank you, Fred.
Oh, thank you, man. And we're going to get him back on the show. We had a very interesting discussion on everything. You've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. And thank you for making this the best show on the Internet. Bye.